And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Linda Lloyd, and today I'm talking with Peggy O'Neill Peden, the author of Your Killin' Heart, published by Minotaur Books. The book is about Campbell Hale, a Nashville travel agent who loves country music star Jake Miller. Jake has the good sense to die young and somewhat mysteriously. Campbell has the good fortune to go to the home where Jake's wife Hazel is still living. Due to her curiosity, she quickly becomes part of a murder investigation. Peggy, why do you think that Campbell and other people in general are fascinated with stars, and especially, as you put it, those who have the good sense to die young?
Well, I think most of us are fascinated with anybody whose lives are different than ours. And so with a star, they're in our world, but out of our world in a way. Sometimes their lives seem very easy. Of course, that's usually not true when you know the whole story. But it's interesting in Nashville that a friend and I were talking on the drive here about times when we'd seen stars in ordinary places, and they seemed kind of out of place in the ordinariness of a shopping mall or something.
Well, and that's one of the things that Campbell says. You know, you run into him at the grocery store.
Right.
Would I recognize somebody? That would be my fear, is that I wouldn't recognize him, you know, and I was in the grocery line with him.
Right. And that would be very disconcerting to them. My son is a high school coach, and he has coached several stars' children. And that's an especial challenge, because you can't treat them differently and be fair to your other students, but nobody else treats them the same either.
And Campbell, the heroine in the story, is really fascinated by one, Jake Miller. And it reminded me of Hank Williams, because, you know, he did die so young.
Right.
Is Jake similar to that in that mystique, and why is she so fascinated with him in particular?
He is in some ways, but he's also very similar to lots of other stars, and stars tend to have more of a mystique around them after they're dead. The legends seem to grow. And I think Campbell was particularly fascinated with Jake because her father had been. And her father would have known about Jake when he was performing.
And she gets the opportunity to visit the home where he lived with his wife, who is still living.
Right.
And just can't pass that opportunity up.
She's curious about that for herself, and also she wants to be able to tell her dad about that experience.
And she has been accused of saying the wrong things around friends and of being too honest.
I wanted her to be outspoken, and the problem with people who are outspoken a lot of times is not that what they say is wrong or untrue, it's that maybe they say it around the wrong people, and it causes conflict. Not always for them, not always for Campbell, but for instance, for the people around her, like Doug.
Mm-hmm. And Doug is her boyfriend, sort of?
Sort of, less and less as the story goes on and as she gets to know Sam a little better. But yes, he starts as her sort of boyfriend.
And she described him as always running away, I think, or that may not be the way that she put it, but basically any time that they started to get close, he would back off.
Right. Seems to be afraid of commitment.
Had they been together for a while?
Well, at the point where this book starts, yes, they've known each other for some time at least, and they have sort of been together for a while.
It sounds like she lives in a beautiful place. I mean, is that a place that you know or that you live?
It is a place that I know. It's a place that I used to think I would love to live on that street. It's a real street. And it runs along the bank of the Cumberland River. And there's been a lot of development near it, but not on it. It's kind of preserved from that. It's kind of hidden behind some of the Opryland and Opryland Hotel commercialism. But it's like you turn a corner and you're in a different world.
Well, the way that you described it, I mean, I could picture that in the serenity that I could feel when she got home, you know, even as she's being chased by somebody. And
yes.
It's almost like her serenity was violated by that.
Right. I was talking to some friends, actually, at church, friends that I've known for several years. And one of them asked me, now, when did you live on that street? it is a real street, and she knew the street, and she had known me for years, and she thought maybe I had really lived there for a while.
I was telling somebody about the way that you describe mockingbirds as being cover artists. Explain that.
Well, the story that I tell in the book was told to me as a true story, where someone hears a dump truck and the beep that large trucks make when they're backing up. And then the truck drove away and the beep continued. And this person looked around and finally found the mockingbird who was making that beep sound. He was mimicking the truck. And in Nashville, everywhere there is music, you hear about people covering an artist's song. They'll re-record a song that somebody else has done. There are cover bands, of course, where the entire band will do works that another band is famous for. So it's the same song, but by someone else. So the mockingbird, I said, was covering the truck's beep.
One day, I thought there was a hawk in my yard, and I kept looking for it, and it was the mockingbird making that same hawk sound. So I really liked the way that you said that. I know another thing that you talked about is how neighborhoods are defined by trees and property values.
You know, we here in Tennessee, we live in an area that has so many trees and such long growing periods. And there are trees that grow wild here that don't grow wild in other places. And every fall, you have so many maples that grow up because they're wild. And of course, oak trees grow wild too, but there aren't as many of them, I think. And oak trees often seem to be older. And I guess I was making the association with old money and areas that had been groomed for a long time.
Versus Campbell's neighborhood that she said has maples and something else. I can't remember what it was.
You know, I don't know. Did I say sycamores, maybe?
Maybe. And then there was oaks and magnolias, yes, in some of the higher dollar neighborhood.
Right, and the magnolias tend to be planted, not growing up wild.
Right. Whereas the maples, I mean, they scatter everywhere.
Right.
And I guess that's the reason when she wants to go to Hazel Miller's house, who's Doug's wife, she's just fascinated because this is a neighborhood that she's known about. She grew up in around Nashville, I guess.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about what she does when she gets into Hazel's house.
Well, she looks and she thinks the whole house is sort of a shrine to Jake's memory. Jake's memory is what keeps Hazel functioning. It supports her. There's not as much money as there used to be, but what money there is comes from Jake's interests, whether it was money he made while he was living or money that comes from artists who are doing covers of his songs. So she sees that, and Doug wants her to stay in place, not wander around, which she does until Jake and Hazel's assistant start looking for the paintings to get together. Then she wanders and she opens a door thinking it's a library or another sitting room or something, and she sees someone very still in a bed in that room. She wasn't expecting to find a bedroom on that floor of the house.
And so they're not really sure who it is, but then the next day they find out.
Right.
Hazel hasn't, in fact, died.
Right. And died during the time they were there.
And so all of a sudden, she becomes embroiled in this mystery about what happened. And just like her, Jake Miller, her husband, there might be some mystery surrounding it.
Right. In both deaths, there was a lot of uncertainty about how they died. And if they died because someone assisted that death, why?
And why would Hazel have been targeted? You know, she was right. An old woman. She's going to die anyway.
Right.
So
she's already near death. So why would somebody be impatient enough to kill her now?
But why did Campbell decide to get involved?
Well, in the first place, she just was sightseeing. She was like the tourists who buy the tickets to the tours of the stars' homes are out on buses all through the summer and weekends other times in Nashville, who want to know what the stars' lives are really like. And so they're on these buses going to the stars' homes. That's how she starts out. She wants to see Jake Miller's home. But then when this murder happens while she's there and she finds herself feeling compelled to tell the police what she saw, and she wasn't even sure what she saw, then it's not really her choice anymore to become embroiled in it. She is.
But she begins her own investigation, too.
Right.
Because she really wants to know what happened.
Right.
Do you think that she thought she could have changed things if she had said something earlier?
I don't really think she thought she could have changed it, but I think she felt possibly someone could have been apprehended sooner. That when she opened that door, somebody was in the room besides Hazel. She saw a curtain stir, and later, thinking back on it, wonders if someone were in there hiding behind that curtain when she opened the door.
Campbell is a travel agent in Nashville, and you were a travel agent at one time. I didn't realize how stressful it was.
Well, it's only stressful when things go wrong.
It was stressful to meet a recap.
Well,
was it like that for
you? Some days it was. Some days everything went smoothly. But some days a client would have his pocket picked in Rome, or luggage would be lost. Or as time went on, during the time that I owned a travel agency in Nashville, there were more and more security concerns. So if a name was misspelled on a ticket when I began, that was not a huge deal. But by the time I sold that travel agency, it was a huge deal if anything was misspelled. And I did a lot of group travel with school and mission groups. And that was always a little extra stressful. There were a lot of names, and they were given to me by someone other than the ticket holder, some organizer of one kind or another. So you have an extra step in there when something could be misspelled or misunderstood.
Campbell has a way of kind of de-stressing by going to the art gallery. And
right.
That is how she met Doug's brother, is through the art gallery. But I wondered if you had seen the sculpture that he ends up giving Campbell for helping repossess these paintings, and that's how they ended up at Hazel Miller's house, if you had seen that, because it was so descriptive, and you said it looked like a lady who could be at the end of a rope.
Actually, I hadn't. I made that up.
Okay.
But I am a painter and belong to the Nashville Artists Guild. And I was thinking of a particular sculptor who was in the Artist Guild. I didn't see a sculptor like this one. I made that one up. But I was thinking of the lines of her work when I wrote that.
But going through to and being at the gallery, she starts to have questions about some of the paintings that she thinks she saw at Hazel's. She's not really sure, but she thinks she saw at Hazel's.
And she comes to those questions because of a trip that she's planning for a group who plan to visit an art gallery in a different state. And my thinking was, that is the kind of thing that would be easy to stay hidden before we were all on the internet every day. And every organization had a website and pictures of the works they would have. But now that's not true. Now we are all looking at stuff like that. And a travel agent would be probably preparing a little brochure with samples of what these people were going to see at that art gallery.
But Campbell gets so involved in this and starts asking questions that obviously somebody doesn't want her to know.
Right.
Do you not think she felt like she could put herself in danger?
I don't think she did until that point, when somebody did follow her home and write things that scared her on her window, obviously meaning her to read that from the inside, which necessitated some real forethought to think about how to write this backwards so it's going to read right from the inside. So I think from that point on, she did feel that she might be putting herself in danger.
She has a really cool car that she drives, an Alfa Romeo Spider. How did you decide that that would be her car?
I had a friend who had had a car like that in the past, and he had kept his owner's manual. And I think it was when he and his wife talked about their car that I thought, oh, that would be a great one for Campbell to have.
It's so unusual, though. I mean, it seems like she would stand out and make it a lot easier for them to follow her.
But, of course, when she got that car, she'd had it for years. She'd had it since she was in college, and she wasn't thinking about hiding from people at the time.
She also has a friend that's in the music business, and you referred to a lot of the different places that they had played and different places. I wondered how many of those actually exist in Nashville. I mean, Bluebird Cafe, everybody knows.
Most of them do. The last fret is a place where some things happen, and I made that up. Anytime I was writing about things that might cause people trouble or discomfort, that's when I usually made up the place rather than using some place that existed. But yes, the Bluebird, Exidian.
Yeah, that
is
was
real.
One too. I didn't know about that one.
Yeah, now it has gone out of business several times and come back, but I think it's back in business now.
Nashville has changed so much. I mean, even in the last 5 years, it's grown
right.
It seems like it'd be a good place for a travel agent to be.
I think so. A lot of people are coming to there, but usually travel arrangements are made in the places people come from. But people in Nashville do travel a lot.
What is it like to research in the country music business?
Well, I know several people who work in different kinds of jobs in the music industry. Some are performers, some are studio musicians. I have a close friend who owns a studio and let me come and sit in his studio and just be a fly on the wall for a while. And I'm going back to his studio one day soon and do that again. So I was around Nashville during the time that Opryland Park was very active and live kind of in that part of town. So I was there a lot and knew people who were performers there. And if you were a performer at Opryland, then, you know, it's a theme park. You weren't a huge star. Some of those people are now. But because they weren't huge stars at the time, sometimes I could be backstage or hear the stories of the inner workings of things.
And Campbell definitely has a good frame of reference from her friend Doug because of that.
Right.
But it's almost like she has an underground network through that, too.
Right. There's Dick, the drummer. There are some other musicians she knows. In a book I'm working on now, dealing with the same characters, there's a star who was a big star and turned his star McMansion into a sort of Airbnb recording studio. So there are lots of people that Campbell knows, and that's not unusual in Nashville.
One thing that you talked about, too, was how difficult life on the road is. That was one reason that Stick the Drummer did sessions rather than do that.
I've known several people who have given up that kind of position in country music because of the difficulty of life on the road. The friend who has the studio that let me be a fly on the wall, he was in a band and they performed regularly at Opryland, the Tennessee River Boys. And that band became Diamond Rio. But the reason he left was to so he could be at home and have a family and raise his children and not be gone from them living on a bus all the time. Mm-hmm. I've known several people like that.
And that was one of the things they talked about with Jake Miller. You had to have somebody who was waiting for you, I think is
right.
The way you put it.
Somebody who would give your life some stability.
And that when he was driving home, he had some big decisions to make.
Right.
And that may be why it contributed to his accident.
Was he drinking as he drove home? Who was with him on that drive? Was it his wife who had come to, I think it was Louisville, to hear him play? Or was it the other singer that he seemed to be having an affair with? And how did that affect what happened in the car that night?
And Jacqueline, his daughter, actually becomes an anesthesiologist rather than get into the music business.
Right.
Do you think some of that is because of what she saw between her parents?
I think so. She wanted stability. She wanted a real career that would let her be in one place. And so she chose a very difficult, but a career that was in one place.
There are a lot of twists and turns in the story, and one of the characters introduced is Jake Miller's grandson, who is also in the music business. Like I said, his daughter Jacqueline could be a part of this. The personal assistant could be, you know, there are all these people. Did any of those change during the time that you were writing the book as to who did it?
Yes, when I originally started writing this, I wrote it as a short story and actually gave it as a gift to a friend who had inspired part of the original story. Then as time went on, it grew and I added to it and made it to book length. And as I did that, then the story changed over that time.
How did you know what details to include? But how do you know what to keep in her personality or what to tell about her life and what to kind of get rid of?
Well, I included most everything I thought of at the first. And I think the process of refining the book is largely getting rid of what doesn't seem to contribute either to the plot or to her character, or getting rid of what seems unnecessary.
There's another incident that you talk about, the 1960s Nashville bombing. And you talked a little bit about how we've forgotten that that was part of the civil rights movement, and Nashville actually played a part in that.
Yes, I saw an interview with John Lewis this morning on CBS This Morning, where he talked about his career, and he went to school at Fisk and was arrested in Nashville. And we tend to forget Nashville's role in a lot of those early civil rights struggles. My older brother was in the Tennessee Air National Guard for a while, and he was in college at the time, and his commanding officer didn't really like him much. And he didn't want to be in military, but he was doing that because that was something he had to do at the time. And he was appointed to Nashville's riot squad. And most people probably don't know we had a riot squad at the time.
Mm-mm.
And I don't think he was ever called out to do anything, but he trained some for that.
Another thing about Campbell is she seems like she's very modern and up-to-date and stuff, but she still has a VCR and tapes. I was, you know, it was like, would she really?
Well, I don't know, but I do. I still have a VCR and tapes because it still works, and I have a few tapes that I like, so I have a couple that I have actually looked for on DVD that I haven't been able to find, and now skip to technology, even leapfrog to technology, but I do, and when I started writing this, that wouldn't have been unusual as it is now.
Mm-hmm. But for her, it's a way that she does research, too.
Right.
And so she's able to go back to, was it the night that Jake Miller died, or was it just one of the performances?
I think she had tapes of his performances, some of them.
And she was able to go back and see the girl that could have been the source of some of the problems.
Right.
Throughout.
She had tapes that showed Rosie Lane's performances, too. I think Rosie Lane was the girl you're thinking of.
Mm-hmm. Well, when she takes that last journey, it's sleeting. I can't imagine driving a small car like that in Nashville in sleet or snow or anything.
Right.
She's actually being chased that night. Had you had experience on black ice and those kind of things? Because it's really real.
Not in a car like that, but I've been out in conditions I probably shouldn't have been out in. And I remember once I was driving with my son in his car seat in the back seat, and we slid into a ditch. And, you know, that's a frightening thing anytime, but when your child is involved, it's even more so.
Right. And then if you've got somebody chasing you, that would even be worse, right?
Right.
You said, every day has 24 hours. If your day starts heading downhill, you can start over whenever you want. Had you heard that before?
I had heard that. I think it's been a while since I wrote that line, but I think it was a friend who had been in AA who told me she had heard that in AA.
But it was like, wow, you can do that. But, you know, and for Campbell and in situations, you pick that up and you go, yeah, I can do that.
And I have had some days when I have thought about that and thought, okay, I'm starting today over now.
How does the writing go for you? Is it something that you do every day, or is it one of those things that you go, okay, I got to get started now?
Both. I have had an extensive career in advertising copywriting, and sometimes you have to do that on demand. You have to do it now, and you have to finish it by a certain deadline. So that was good preparation for this. So sometimes I have extra time, and I always keep a notebook handy. I have one in my car today, and I will sit and write. And there's a place that I go that's on the banks of a lake nearby, and I'll just sit out there and write sometimes. But then other times I'll think, okay, I need to get some writing done. I don't write every day. I have been very busy this summer and early spring doing some promotional work for Your Killing Heart, so I have not done as much as I should have over the summer. I've been telling myself lately, I've got to get back to a schedule.
I've got to get buckled down.
Yes.
But apparently you are writing another book.
I am.
And is this a series about Campbell?
I would like for it to be, yes. I actually have two manuscripts that are finished that are about Campbell and Sam and Doug and some of these other characters that deal with her travel more. So a lot of what happens will happen away from Nashville. But the one I'm working on now is more centered in Nashville again, like Your Killing Heart was.
Well, we've referred to Sam a couple of times. We should explain who he is.
Sam is a Metro homicide detective. And Campbell meets him because he is the detective in charge of the investigation when Hazel is killed. As she is forced to spend time with him and get to know him better, she likes him. And he seems to like her, although they have conflicts. And part of what interests them about each other are the things they have conflicts in.
Well, she's surprised when he shows up at a basketball game because she kind of thinks he might be following her.
Right. And of course, he's not. He's there because his daughter's a cheerleader. And that's in the part of town where she lives, part of town where Opryland, where the Opry House is. And so it's natural that he would be there at that location.
Well, this is your first published book?
Right.
But you've actually been writing for much longer.
Right.
Did it take you a long time to get published?
It did. Lots and lots of query letters, lots and lots of very kind rejection slips. And then a couple of years ago, I had entered this book in the Malice Domestic competition, which is for cozy type mysteries where you can kill a person, but you can't hurt a dog or cat. And I have been drawn to that genre always because the language has to be pretty clean. It's not gruesome. And I occasionally read much darker books, but I didn't want to live in the world of those darker books. So I submitted it all these years as I queried editors and agents. I also revised and rewrote and tried to make it better every time. This time I sent it in one more time and it won. And part of its winning entailed publication by St. Martin's, Minotaur, Macmillan, that group.
That had to be a great day.
It was a great day. I could hardly believe it. I was actually at work and I read the email and I just shut my computer and I went home. And when I got home, I read it again and I thought, this is for real. And it was about 2 years from that point before the book actually came out.
Was it painful going through edits?
No, it wasn't. They didn't want to make a whole lot of changes. I really appreciated the work of the copy editors and proofreaders. They called my attention to things. I remember one time I got an email and they wanted me to change Franklin Road to Franklin Pike because someone had looked it up on the internet and it was Franklin Pike officially. And of course, in Nashville, there are many places where the street signs will say Franklin Pike. There are others where it says Franklin Road. And it happened that the day I read that email, I was driving on maybe 440 somewhere in Nashville and I crossed that road, which is 8th Avenue before it becomes Franklin Pike or Road. And at that point, the sign said Franklin Road. I took a picture and sent it to her, and I agreed that, yes, Franklin Pike is certainly a valid name for it, but people in Nashville will be more comfortable with Franklin Road probably than Franklin Pike. And there's actually a school, Franklin Road Academy, that's on it. And they said, okay, fine, if you think that's what it needs to be. And they pointed out some things that I thought did need to be changed. And so I really appreciated the attention they gave to it.
Well, how did you decide to weave the country music, the travel agency, and the murder mystery all together?
I like all those things. I was a travel agent, so it made sense to draw from real experiences.
What you know.
Also, at the time I first started this, Nashville wasn't an it city, and Nashville wasn't a very commercially appealing place to set a book. So that was really the reason I thought, well, then I'll make her a travel agent, and then she can go anywhere. And in these other two manuscripts I already have finished, that's exactly what I did. I took her to Mexico in one. I took her to Miami in one. I could see all sorts of possibilities for that. And then country music is just there. It's so pervasive in Nashville. My dad, in his youth, really did play in a little band with a bunch of friends who weren't planning to do anything career-wise, who just got together and played their guitars. one of my favorite pictures of my dad when he was a young man shows him standing between two cousins, and all three of them are holding their guitars, and they're very proud of those guitars. Also, my older brother was in a band in high school, and they made a record. They never went anywhere with it, but music was part of life, so it seemed only natural that that would be part of big events that happened. A couple of months ago, it was actually after the book came out, I asked a friend to go with me, and we just drove around town one day. And I had a couple of places that I wanted to go and see, but also I just wanted to drive around. And she had grown up in Nashville, and the part of town that she knew well was not the part of town I knew well. And we went to a cemetery that I have driven by hundreds and thousands of times, but she showed me graves of country music stars that I had no idea were buried there. It was very interesting because it's all over town.
It's like Memphis and our music.
Absolutely.
You know, with Elvis and, you know,
right.
When I was picturing Hazel Miller's mansion, and Campbell says, you know, it was kind of surprising, the decoration and what they chose, I thought about Graceland.
Yes, and I've never been inside Graceland, but I lived in the Memphis area for a couple of years a long time ago, and I was always getting lost. I always had a map in my glove box because I knew I would get lost. It was while Elvis was alive, and he and Jerry Lee Lewis had had a conflict. And I think Jerry Lee Lewis had shown up at his back door with a gun or something. It had been in all the newspapers. And I was lost, and I made a turn, and suddenly I realized I was at the back gate entrance to Graceland. And I was scared. I thought I'd better get out of there fast because I thought, you know, they are going to be on alert because this incident had happened so recently.
I know that you were also an English teacher, so this is sort of your third career, maybe?
Well, some of those careers have been going on at the same time. A lot of the time that I was teaching English, I taught as an adjunct at Lipscomb University for several years, and a lot of that time I was also working for an ad agency. I also taught some part-time while I owned the travel agency. So some of that's all gone on at the same time.
Well, now that you've got the book out, you probably had some good reviews and maybe some not-so-good reviews. How are you reacting to the people that go, oh, not, I don't like this?
Well, I've been reading books for a long time, and some of them I like, some I love, and some I don't like so much that other people do like. So that's part of what I have told myself, that we don't all like the same thing. Some of the not great reviews that I've heard have to do with things that are characteristics of this genre. And if you don't like this genre, then you're not going to like this genre. I get that. I have finally come to terms with the fact that that's okay. And I think part of that also is a result of my career in advertising. In advertising, you write what somebody wants you to write. And somebody that may not be a good writer, may not be good using the English language, has the authority to tell you what he wants to advertise his business. That's the job. So I think I learned a lot from those years of experience.
And I asked you before about Campbell Hale becoming a series, and you said you had thought about that and obviously have two manuscripts. Is that a possibility? Because she's a very interesting girl.
Thank you. It is a possibility. In fact, I'm waiting to hear from my agent about what happens next with that.
All right. We'll look forward to seeing more from you in the future. And I appreciate you being with us today on Book Talk.
Thank you. I've talked in the past couple of days to a couple of different Memphis booksellers who either have the book or have it on order, and of course it's available online, a variety of things, but I've left some postcards at some places that have the cover art, and I'm really excited about the cover. It was done by a Nashville artist who does a lot of neighborhood posters for neighborhood festivals in Nashville.
And so you actually got a say in that. Sometimes, you know, the author's not really sure, and then they might pick something, but you actually were able to do that?
Well, they sent me the cover for approval, and I had one suggestion, and I learned quickly that they said approval, and they weren't very nice about that. What they meant was, yes, it's for you to approve. It's not really for you to have much decision-making about it. And it was after the approval process that I found that the artist was a Nashville artist. And then I got to meet her, which was a lot of fun.
Well, good. So this has been a good experience all around for you.
It has.
Fantastic. Well, we appreciate you being with us in Memphis today.
Thank you.
We've reached the end of our time for today's book talk. I've been talking with Peggy O'Neill Peden, the author of You're Killin' Heart. The book is the winner of the Malice Domestic Best First Traditional Mystery Novel Competition and has been described as a Nashville hit, as heroine Campbell Hale is caught up in dangerous doing surrounding a country music icon's legacy. The book is published by Minotaur Books. I'm Linda Lloyd, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WIPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at WIPLFM@gmail.com or write to us at Book Talk, care of WIPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111, or call us at 901-415-2752.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work. But there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WYPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.